This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of the Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, AttentionTalkRadio.com, AttentionTalkVideo.com, and AttentionTalkNews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at Facebook.com/AttentionTalkRadio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Tonight is Wednesday, December the 4th, the year 2013, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a really good show for you tonight, Making Sense of Nutrition and ADHD. This was a fun show for me to do. I got a great education. Nutrition is one of those things that I think that the nutritionists out there, it's a very tough degree to get because it's relatively complicated. There's not a one-size-fits-all, and there's a lot of intricacies on it. A lot is talked and advertised and spoken about nutrition when it comes to ADD. And so tonight's show is really kind of about the basics, the most fundamental things. And we've got a few shows that we're going to follow up on, or a few shows that will be aired in the coming weeks that will follow up on more specificity with regard to nutrition and ADHD. But I thought that this would be a great show foundationally to get the topic kind of kicked off. We haven't done anything on nutrition with regard to ADHD and Attention Talk Radio, so we're real excited to bring this to you. Some say maybe I should have aired this before Thanksgiving, but I figure, you know, everybody go have your fun, enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday, and we'll run it kind of afterwards. So we got a great guest in our virtual studio. That's Dr. Sandy Newmark, and so let's get on with things.
I'm here with Dr. Sandy Newmark. He's the head of Pediatric Integrative Neurodevelopment Clinic at Osher Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of California in San Francisco, where he teaches and mentors medical students, doctors in training, and other health professionals. Dr. Newmark graduated from the University of Arizona College of Medicine and completed his pediatric residency at the University of Arizona. After 12 years in private practice, he began a two-year fellowship with Dr. Andrew Wild's prestigious program at the Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine, and has the distinction of being the first graduate there. Dr. Newmark is also the founder of the Center for Pediatric Integrative Medicine and the author of ADHD Without Drugs, A Guide to the Natural Care of Children with ADHD. He's a frequent writer and lecturer on integrative medicine, autism, and ADHD. He dispels the myths and misinformation surrounding ADHD with plain language that is easily understandable and can be put to immediate use. He and his wife had years of real-life experience parenting a son who was intensely challenging and a daughter of special needs as well. Dr. Newmark, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm thrilled to be here because this is going to be a great little education for me. I got to tell you, back in the 70s, I was a competitive swimmer. I actually went to school on a swimming scholarship, and I used to hear about nutrition, and I always wanted to learn a little bit about it. And I got overwhelmed with all the, you know, there's vitamins and minerals and fats and carbohydrates and supplements and additives and metabolism and fiber, protein, omega-3s, allergies, sensitivities. It kind of got a little, has been very overwhelming to me. And what I was hoping to do today is kind of talk about my understanding about how it all kind of comes together. Maybe you can correct me. And if I'm lucky, I'm not that far off, and our listeners can actually begin to make a little bit of sense of some of this stuff, because I do think it can get a little confusing. Does that work for you?
That sounds great.
All right. So to me, to begin with, the body is like a manufacturing plant that it needs raw materials in. It takes it and processes it and uses it to build the body and keep the body running, and it's in its most simple form. And it needs, the materials coming in order to do the stuff moving out. Some of the things that it needs is it needs vitamins, vitamins are to me, like organic material, where minerals is like dirt. Is that accurate so far?
Well, yeah, it's true. Although some of minerals come in organic forms. Generally vitamins are more complex organic chemicals, where minerals can be very, very simple, like zinc or iron.
Yep, yep. So,
they're metal.
But let me see if I can tie this in. Maybe I'm running wrong, but you know, you don't go and you eat dirt. I mean, you don't eat dirt. So you got to have a vehicle to bring it in. And to me, fiber and like plants is one of those vehicles, because your body doesn't actually process fiber. Is that? I mean, it kind of passes through your body and kind of cleans it out. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, fiber generally refers to somewhat indigestible substances that are in food. And fiber has some very important health benefits, especially for your bowels, because it draws water into your bowels and keeps things moving and avoids constipation. But minerals don't come in fiber. Minerals and vitamins actually come in everything we eat.
Okay.
Meat has minerals, like iron, of course, is a classic mineral that meat has. Vegetables have minerals. Fruits have minerals. Carbohydrates have minerals. Beans, which is a carbohydrate, has lots of minerals. So basically, almost everything we eat has some minerals and fiber and vitamins in it.
Okay. So it's coming from all those different places. So if
yeah.
we've got vitamins and minerals, we also have fats, proteins, and carbohydrates.
Right. Those are what we call the macronutrients, which macro means big. Those are like the big ones that we need really good amounts of in order to survive. No, despite the people who are fanatics about the paleo diet, you still need some carbohydrates to live. And you certainly need some protein, and you certainly need some fat to live. So you've got to get a certain amount of those foods, of calories of those foods every day, you know, to perform basic living functions and to have muscles and to
yep.
live.
So if I reframe this, is basically you need elements, and they can come in the form of vitamins, minerals, fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. Those are like the building blocks that the body uses in order to do its thing. Is that
right? And the one distinction is you need big amounts of carbohydrates,
yep.
proteins, and fat, and the minerals and vitamins are what we call micronutrients. You don't need very much of them, but you really need them. And if you don't have them, you get sick.
Got it. So if we got those basic elements, then we have things that sometimes are added. You had additives, and you've got preservatives. And those are things that are added to, that we add to food. Some of them are good, and some of them are not so good. So like a preservative might be good. Is that accurate? Well,
right.
Good
so, yeah, an additive refers to anything that doesn't naturally come in the food that we put in it.
Uh-huh.
Whereas a preservative refers to something that's actually purposely put in to preserve the food. So you might
mm-hmm.
think of it as a food coloring as an additive because it doesn't even preserve the food. Whereas, say, a preservative there's lots of them, BHT or BHA or nitrites. Those are specifically to preserve foods, and they certainly have their function. If you're going to have anything but fresh foods, certain kinds of foods, the kind of how our culture has evolved, where stuff goes to the supermarket and sits on the shelf and that kind of stuff, it needs to be preserved. The problem is some of these preservatives are not very good for you. An example is nitrites, which are often in things like salami and hot dogs to preserve that meat,
mm-hmm.
Actually are associated with increased cancer risk.
Okay.
So
like
preservatives can be bad for you, but
they can be.
There's some that are safer than others.
Salt can be an additive for taste, but salt also can be a preservative. Is that right?
That's right. Salt can be, first of all, foods have a certain amount of salt in them naturally.
Uh-huh.
And then you can add more salt just for taste. And it can be a preservative mainly in meats, salted meats is or even, I don't know, sauerkraut, as an example, using salt. So, I mean, there's different stuff.
Salt's actually used in canning, so like pickles. That's actually kind of a brine. And the reason I bring it up is kind of funny. I do a lot of cycling, and recently I did a 100-mile bike race in the mountains of Georgia. I'm an old fart, so I get cramps all the time. And a guy turned me on to drinking pickle juice as a means to do it. I got to tell you something. I've had a couple cramps before, and you take the pickle juice, and I don't know if it's my mind or if this is something real to it, but I got to tell you, the cramps go away.
That's great.
It's kind of funny because I never thought I'd do it, but you know, because you used to buy the pickles and disregard the juice. Now I buy the the pickles for the juice and don't know what to do with the pickles. So we have that stuff in. Now we also add things to food. Kind of a supplement would be an additive too. Like let's say that you were maybe deficient in an area, you would supplement it with maybe iron, zinc, or something like that. Is that
right? That would be a supplement. Supplement is, you know, generally refers to anything you add to your diet that doesn't come in the foods you eat. You know, most of the supplements we take are vitamins and minerals and sometimes fish oil and things like that. That would all be called dietary supplements.
Okay. Now, do some people just naturally, their bodies for whatever reason have, you know, deficiencies in a certain area, like they might need more of one thing or their body can't absorb it or can't process it for whatever reason? Because I've heard of deficiencies before. I'm sure some of that is a result of poor diet, but just naturally in nature, do some people just have deficiencies in an area and might need more of what they can get, what they can normally
get? That's right. I mean, I think some of our deficiencies are because we don't eat the kind of fresh, wholesome food that maybe we once did. Also, people have individual needs. I mean, not everybody is the same. We're learning more and more, I think, that, you know, you probably have read a lot about gene testing and this kind of, you know, for susceptibility to disease. But I think we're finding out also that, you know, people have different abilities to digest and metabolize certain nutrients. So two people could eat the same amount of zinc in their food, and one person might be deficient and the other person might not.
Wow.
So it's very individual, yeah.
Yeah, I want to get into that a little bit more, but we need to go to a commercial break. For our listeners out there, you've got a great book, ADHD Without Drugs, A Guide to the Natural Care of Children with ADHD. And our listeners, the best place to get that is off of Amazon.com, if I'm correct. Right?
That's correct.
So check out the book, and with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Breaking news. Chad introduces the new digital edition of Attention Magazine, starting with the August issue and continuing with each bi-monthly issue. The digital edition is available for easy reading on www.chad.org. Through collaborative leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support, CHAD and Attention Magazine work to provide science-based information about ADHD to parents, educators, and professionals who treat the disorder, the media, and the general public. When you advertise in Attention Magazine, your advertisement that includes a website address will automatically have a link to your website. There is no additional fee for your digital edition advertisement. It's free.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Dr. Newmark talking about making sense of nutrition and ADHD. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about deficiencies and kind of working our way into absorption rates. And another area that I'm kind of like metabolism. I understand, you know, people have different metabolism, different levels, and I've always classified that as that's your ability to process or burn, I guess, food or minerals or intake. Can you tell us a little bit about what metabolism is and how it can vary or what its impact is?
Okay, sure. So metabolism really, in the broadest sense, describes like every chemical reaction that goes on in our body. You know, almost every cell we takes in nutrients and does something with them. So you know, we're taking in, you know, a piece of meat or an apple or something like that, and eventually it has to, all those vitamins and sugars and proteins have to be broken down into their and digested into their constituent elements, and then the body has to do something with them so that all the requirements of cells can be taken care of. That's sometimes confused with metabolic rate, which is like how fast people burn calories, or in a sense how much of their calories they burn and how much they convert into fat. Because when you have a bunch of calories, you use some of them for energy, and if you take more calories in than energy you put out, then the rest gets converted into fat.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where the world's really not fair, because you could take two people who do exactly the same amount of exercise and eat the exact same amount of food, and one person will tend to gain weight and be overweight, and the other person will be skinny. And that's because there's just a natural difference in their metabolic rate, how they process foods, which is a bummer for those people who...
So, like, I'm getting older. My metabolism isn't changing, but my metabolic rate certainly seems to be, because if I ate what I used to eat, I'd be huge.
That's exactly right. The same thing happened to me. I used to be able to, I could eat all day long and not gain any weight, and it's no longer true. So our metabolic rate tends to, you know, decrease. We tend to have a little more tendency to put on weight. We're not using as much energy for whatever reason,
interesting,
even if we're exercising.
So you have athletically, I know, like, if you're exercising and you get a certain amount of dehydrated and you start drinking water, you can only absorb, this is my understanding, you can only absorb so much water. There's a period of time that you just can't absorb a gallon of water instantaneously. It happens over a period of time. And my understanding is the same thing as with food. Like, when you got to eat athletically over a period of time consistently, because there's an absorption rate to that. So is that true? Am I misrepresenting that? And how does
that's true. Yeah, our bodies can only do so much. I mean, if you drink a gallon of water, I mean, most of it's going to come right out in your urine.
Mm.
And the same thing with, you know, you can only absorb the nutrients and you know, so much nutrients in food. There's a lot of mechanisms. It's not just a passive process. You know, you eat some food and it all just sort of diffuses into your body by some, like, gravity or something. It takes a lot. There's like a lot of chemical reactions going on that helps you break up that food into little bits, amino acids and sugars and fats, and then that has to be taken up through your intestinal wall, and you know, this.
Yep.
It's an active process.
Interesting. Now, we've talked about the metabolism and metabolic way of, you know, processing that and absorbing it, but everybody's also a little different, because some people have allergies or allergies to something, sensitivities to others, and we talked a little bit about deficiencies. Can you just talk about the nature of allergies and sensitivities and its impact on nutrition?
Well, yeah, so starting with allergies, an allergy is where you're body reacts to some substance in a negative way, some otherwise innocuous substance. So, you know, a perfect example is 90% of people can you know, walk through a rose bed and feel smell the roses, and they smell great. And then the other 10% of people, they walk through a rose bed and they, you know, their nose swells and mucus comes pouring out, or they may even start coughing and wheezing. So their body reacts in this as if an otherwise innocuous substance was an invader. Mm-hmm. And that can happen with foods as well. So there's people, for instance, and I'm sure everybody knows this, if they have the slightest bit of peanuts, they'll go into anaphylactic shock. So that's an allergy. And we can measure, allergies are measurable. We can do a skin test or even a blood test and measure the degree of allergic reactivity to pollens, to molds, and to foods. So that's what an allergy is. And food allergies, interestingly, have been going up very significantly over the last several decades. There's way more people with food allergies than there used to be.
Any hypothesis on what's driving that?
Well, the most interesting hypothesis is called the hygiene hypothesis.
Uh-huh.
And that's not proven, but the hygiene hypothesis says that we're too clean as infants.
Yep.
And that we're no longer exposed to all the infectious disease that we used to be exposed to. And therefore, the infectious disease arm of our immune system is less challenged, and therefore the allergic arm of our immune system becomes more prominent.
Mm.
So, for instance, kids who grow up on farms tend to have less allergies.
Interesting.
Because there's more, you know,
yep.
dirt,
yep.
germs, and everything all flying around. So that's kind of the hypothesis.
Well,
I'm not sure that's true.
A second ago, we were talking about allergies, and you referenced it in terms of a reaction. And what popped into my mind is a reaction, and again, I thought chemical reaction, because you've got this thing and it's interacting with your body somehow, and it's kind of creating a reaction. Is a reaction a chemical thing, or is it just an irritant, or what?
No, it's a chemical reaction. There are certain cells in your body that are sitting around waiting. If you have, let's say you're allergic to grass,
uh-huh.
you know, and you know you get out in the grass. There's all these little cells in your nose that sense the actual little pieces floating up
yep.
in the grass, and then these things, these little cells actually burst and send out all these chemical mediators, which causes white cells to come and histamine to be released, and you know. Mucus to flow, and so yeah, it's a chemical reaction.
Wow. Okay, so very, very.
But we didn't
helpful.
Talk about sensitivities.
Okay.
So certain people, especially to foods, have sensitivities where the food makes them sick in some way, but it's not a measurable allergy. Our tests can't find it. It doesn't have the usual mechanism of allergy, and we see this with people all the time that. Gluten may cause them to be bloated and cause rashes and all kinds of experiences, and yet if you did an allergy test, it would be negative.
Mm.
And so that's, as we were talking about in another interview, many children with
yep.
ADHD have food sensitivities where dairy or wheat or corn might make them more hyperactive and less able to concentrate, yet if you did a food allergy test, it would be negative. So that's a sensitivity, any kind of reaction to food that you can't demonstrate to be a true allergy.
Fascinating. Let's talk about toxic buildup. I've heard that before, and I don't know. I mean, I've heard you need vitamin C because you drink it and it kind of flows through the body, but there's other things that are stored in fats that can kind of build up and be toxic. Can you educate me on that?
You mean like vitamins that might become toxic?
Yeah.
So it's true. When you take nobody ever got toxic on eating food from certain vitamins, right? But
mm-hmm.
when you start taking vitamin supplements, then you can become toxic. Although it's true that there's so much vitamin A in polar bear liver that people have actually become toxic from eating it, but not a lot of us do that. Pretty soon, won't be any more polar bears left to work. But say there's certain vitamins that are fat soluble, and certain vitamins that are water-soluble. The water-soluble vitamins are much harder to get toxic on because essentially when you get too many, we pee them out.
Mm-hmm.
But fat-toxic vitamins get stored in the fat cells and in the fatty parts of our body, and those don't get peed out. And that's vitamin E and vitamin D and vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin E are the fat-soluble vitamins. And you can easily get toxic, say, from too much vitamin A. You can actually get brain swelling from too much vitamin A.
Carrots are rich in vitamin A, right?
Ah, but yes and no. Carrots are rich in carotenes, which our body uses to make vitamin A.
Okay.
But carotenes are water soluble.
Got
so it. You will just get rid of those. It's only if you take the preformed vitamin A that you can get toxic. So there's really no food except polar bear livers that I know of that can make you toxic in vitamins. You have to take them separately.
But you can, so there's a little bit of a danger sometimes in just taking supplements if you don't know what you're doing, because if you're taking the wrong stuff, it could build up and create a problem.
There is. And one of the ways I see the dangers is sometimes parents will come to me who've been to several doctors, or not even been to doctors, but have added all these different supplements. And they might not realize that several of the supplements have the same vitamin in them.
Mm.
Most supplements don't have toxic levels of anything because there is control over that. And, you know, and nobody's going to let them, you know, put 30,000 units of vitamin A in a
uh-huh.
vitamin. On the other hand, some people might be taking several supplements and don't know that they're duplicating the same vitamin.
Mm. And then all of a sudden, voila, it builds up over a period of time, and it's not easy to get out of the body because the water's not, fluid's not washing it out.
Right. No, it won't wash out fat-soluble vitamins.
And that can create a problem depending on the toxicity of it.
Problem.
Okay.
I mean, it's not that common, but it does happen. It does happen.
Okay.
You can also, by the way, overdose on the other vitamins. It's just harder.
Got it. Just taking where we are, we're talking about washing the body out. Let's talk about hydration for a little bit.
Okay.
Your body needs a certain amount of water to kind of help process this and kind of flush it all out.
Your body needs water not just to flush things out, but I mean your whole body is 90% water,
mm-hmm.
and if you don't get enough water, the levels of lots of bad things will happen. But one of the things is the levels of electrolytes, you know, sodium and potassium and things like that in your body, compared to water, will build up, and that can be quite toxic.
Mm. So. Talking about ADD for a second, I've had some other interviews talking about hydration, and one of the things that I've learned, and I'm just looking to kind of confirm or deny it, is that those with ADHD struggle more when they're dehydrated, because if you're your body needs water, blood takes nutrients kind of around, and your brain needs some of that stuff, and if it's not optimal, it can affect executive functioning. Furthermore, what I understand is many stimulants actually they can actually help accelerate dehydration, and some of the stimulants actually suppress your desire thirst. Is that myth, or is there some accuracy to some of that?
Well, let's take those one at a time. First of all, do ADHD people do worse when they're dehydrated? Well, There's not research about that, but I think that's probably true. I mean, I think that when you're dehydrated, lots of brain functions don't work as well. And if you're an ADD person, you will suffer more, I think.
Mm-hmm. About the notion that stimulants are, it's kind of like coffee kind of will accelerate dehydration.
So coffee is a good example because it's in the same family as drugs as the stimulants. Coffee will make you pee more. Now, at a certain point, your body is going to like cut that off and mm-hmm. stop peeing less. But in the short term, I think if you don't drink enough, you could get most people drink coffee don't get so dehydrated that, you know, they go to the hospital or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you could get a little dehydrated if you're taking stimulants and not paying attention to, you know, drinking enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you take stimulants and, you know, you're getting really hyper-focused and you just sort of do your thing without drinking, then I could imagine, you know, you wouldn't be quite as well hydrated as you could be.
So that leads into the next thing is if you're taking stimulants, can that suppress your urge for water?
I don't know that that's true, except in the sense if you get hyper-focused from the stimulants.
Okay.
What I mean? If you get hyper-focused, you might not decide to, you know, your drinking may not occur to you.
That makes sense to me.
All of it, really. Yeah, yeah.
It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Fascinating. I tell you what, we need to run to another commercial break. And we come back, we've covered a lot of territory, but I want to kind of start bringing this together because I think that we've covered a lot of different things, but I think there's a real learning here opportunity by squeezing this together. For our listeners, again, Dr. Newmark's book, go check it out, ADHD Without Drugs, A Guide to the Natural Care of Children with ADHD. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention@attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We heard Dr. Newmark talking about making sense of nutrition and ADHD. And we've been talking a lot about making some sense of nutrition. I want to kind of make the turn a little bit towards pulling this all together between nutrition and ADHD. And Dr. Newmark, I did an interview, I think 2 years ago with David Gwork of the ADD Coaching Academy, and he has this model that he uses that I think is really kind of cool. It's called the machine, the mind, and the mission. And the crux of it is you have the machine, which is kind of like the physical brain, at least in this metaphor, and then you have the mind, which is the thoughtful, mindful brain that your thoughts kind of travel on. And those two, the physical brain and your thoughtful, mindful brain, they need to work in harmony together optimally if you're going to achieve your mission. And in coaching a lot, you know, we spend a lot of time coaching the mind and what you're paying attention to, but this nutrition thing to me speaks a lot to the machine part. And like a computer, if the hardware is not working optimally, it makes it very difficult for the software to run. And the reason I wanted to do this show and put it all into context is, one, talk about these things so people have an idea what they are, but actually kind of give you the sense about how complicated your body is, how different it is, and how important it is to not go to extremes. You don't want to have too many vitamins because that can create a problem, but if you don't have enough, then you got another problem. And the idea is you got to keep this thing center in the road because you want your body and your brain working optimally so that your mind can work with it. Your thoughts on that concept?
Well, I totally agree. I think, though, that, I mean, there's almost no, to me, differentiation between the mind and the body. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. they're just so inseparable that when you don't have optimal nutrition, or if you're eating something, food that you're sensitive to, it's going to affect how you perform, how your brain is working, how your mind is working. So yeah, I mean, it's all there.
And if you're out there and you have an ADHD diagnosis and you go in, you get a stimulant medication, you can get that. But if your diet's not necessarily right, that's actually going to impact the ability of the stimulant to do what it's supposed to do. Is that right?
Oh, that's exactly right. There was one very interesting study about zinc, just as an example, where when they gave people who were taking a stimulant zinc, it reduced their average amount of stimulant they needed by 37%. So they sort of changed the dose of the stimulant until they got just the right amount, and they needed almost 40% less of it when they took the zinc.
Wow.
So I think it's really important that when we talk about nutrition and ADHD, it doesn't become we're either going to take drugs or we're going to have good nutrition kind of thing. I mean, although my book's called ADHD Without Drugs, just to, you know, kind of just to get people's attention, I actually use medication a lot in my practice when I need to. And that doesn't mean you stop having good nutrition and you start eating Pop-Tarts for breakfast or stop your fish oil. You should think of nutrition as a really important tool, whether or not you're taking stimulants.
I think this is a big deal, but I also, one of my things is I think it's overlooked far too often. And honestly, I'm not so sure people really have an education because I hear, complex carbohydrates, simple carbohydrates, da, da, da. And after a while, everybody talks about some of that stuff, but, I mean, you hear it, but, again, it's not put together in the context, which I hope this helped everybody put together a little bit of a context. But at the end of the day, the complexity of nutrition and the education out there is there's a big gap between those two. And I think at the end of the day, everybody throws up their hands and just goes eats what they want, which is not helping your situation at all.
No, and you're right about that. And part of that problem is doctors' problems. Most doctors have almost no training in nutrition. Even now, the amount of training in nutrition doctors get is really small and totally inadequate. So if doctors are not going to get trained in it, how are you expecting the average person to be trained? And the second thing is it's the media just puts out all these headlines that drive everybody crazy. They'll take one study and go blah 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 blah, and then suddenly, as if people are all supposed to change their entire diet because one study got put out. And that's a part of what I think you're saying is that people start looking at all this stuff and they go, I don't know what to do.
Yep.
There's a great saying that a really good way of simplifying it. It goes like this: eat foods, mostly plants, not too much. If you actually go by that, you will really go far towards. It's by Michael Pollan, who wrote a book called The Omnivore's Dilemma, which I think is the best book about food ever written. As we throw in a plug for that, just because it talks about just what you're talking about. But if you eat real food, so now you're not eating, Pop-Tarts and artificial colors and flavors, and you eat mostly plants. That means you're getting a lot of meat and a lot of different vegetables and fruits and beans and stuff, and then some meat. And you don't eat too much. You're probably like partway there.
Yep.
We can't. The media and certain scientists have taken it away from deciding what foods we eat to these nutritionomics. Like we're trying to decide how much of these nutritional categories to eat instead of what foods to eat.
Yep.
Know what I mean?
Interesting.
Let's eat
very
good foods. Let's eat beans and nuts and vegetables and fruits and some meat, and we'll do pretty well even if we don't overprocess.
Touche. I want to pause here for a second because you said something that is very profound and I think very, very truthful and I think worth highlighting. And you said that doctors really don't they get no training in nutrition.
Very little, scandalously little. If a doctor doesn't go try and find it elsewhere, they're not going to know nearly what they should know.
That's
just terrible.
You just pause for a second and say, if I want my body to work optimally, you need kind of like a case manager that's going to take everything into play. And to defend the doctors a little bit is, to me, I've coached multiple people that are going through their residencies and became doctors, and just listening to them, the sheer volume, because my brother got his degree in physics, and my sister-in-law got a degree in biology, and he told me one time, you know, it's funny, the physics books really haven't changed much in a couple decades, but the biology books are changing, like, all the time, because we're always finding this new stuff. And to keep up with all that stuff and to run a business on the side and to have a personal life is kind of overwhelming, so I can see the over – just you can't do it all. So at the end of the day – is you would like to think that they know a lot about nutrition, but there's almost no training, and they don't necessarily seek it out there. But at the end of the day, the case manager in this world ends up having to be the person themselves that's overseeing their body, which I think it's important to understand nutrition on your own and not rely on other people to do it for you. Thoughts on that?
Unfortunately, I would completely agree. Perhaps if we had a medical system that was based more on keeping people healthy than curing disease, we would have people who maybe would be better guides. We don't have a healthcare system. We have a disease management system. And if we really had a healthcare system, we would teach people about nutrition and make that a really important aspect of our care from day one. But it's not there now, so I agree with you completely. People have to become their own experts.
You just said something I just really love. We don't have a healthcare system because if we did, it would be a paradigm shift. No longer just diagnose and treat, but it'd be more holistic. We'd be looking at your health and caring for it down the road, not just reacting to it.
Yep, that's right. That quote about a disease management system is from Dr. Andrew Weil, by the way. I don't want to take credit for making it up.
Wow,
it's really
wow.
True.
We need to wrap things up a little bit, but anything that we've missed here that you think worth commenting on or bringing out?
Well, we talked about ADHD in another interview, but I would just,
mm-hmm.
since this is a separate one, I would really want to emphasize for those with ADHD how important it is to eat healthful food and to try and get, especially at breakfast and lunch, some protein and non-processed or low glycemic index carbohydrates, some fat. And don't rely on just the carbohydrates, processed food, which will give you these blood sugar swings where your blood sugar will go up and then drop down rather suddenly, and then you find yourself way more irritable and hyperactive. So really being careful with your meals and staying away from the junk food, I think, is a big impact on ADHD.
Very well said. Again, listeners out there, this is Dr. Newmark and his book, ADHD Without Drugs, A Guide to the Natural Care of Children with ADHD. I encourage you to go check it out. And with that, Dr. Newmark, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much. It was really a pleasure.
Been very, very insightful, and I'm getting my degree in nutrition here, starting with this. It's really, really helped you. Appreciate you coming on the show, and I know I learned a lot. So, everyone out there, we hope you enjoyed it. Catch us another week next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio.